be a drop of amusement because Peter likes to be amused. Raising his eyebrows, he says, Lara Jean, what the... I don't answer. I just kiss him. My first thought is, I have muscle memory of his lips. My second thought is, I hope Josh is watching. He has to be watching or it's all for nothing. My heart is beating so fast, I forget to be afraid of doing it wrong. Because for about 3 seconds, he's kissing me back. Peter Kavinsky, the boy of every girl's dreams, is kissing me back. I haven't kissed that many boys before. Peter Kavinsky, John Ambrose McLaren, Allie Feldman's cousin with the weird eye, and now Peter again. I open my eyes, and Peter's staring at me with that same expression on his face. Very sincerely, I say, Thank you. He replies,
You're welcome.
And I hop out of his arms and sprint off in the opposite direction. It takes all of history class and most of English for my heart rate to slow down. I kissed Peter Kavinsky in the hallway, in front of everybody, in front of Josh. I didn't think this through, obviously. That's what Margot would say, including and especially the obviously. If I had thought it through, I would have made up a boyfriend and not picked an actual person. More specifically, I would not have picked Peter K. He is literally the worst person I could have picked because everybody knows him. He's Peter Kavinsky, for Pete's sake. Kavinsky of Jen and Kavinsky. It doesn't matter that they're broken up. They're an institution at this institution. I spend the rest of the day hiding out. I even eat my lunch in the girls' bathroom. My last class of the day is gym, with Peter. Coach White gives us a reintroduction to the weight room, and we have to practice using the machines. Peter and his friends already know how to use them, so they separate off from the group and have a free throw contest, and I don't get a chance to talk to him. At one point, he catches me looking at him, and he winks, which makes me want to shrivel up and die. After class is over, I wait for Peter outside the boys' locker room, planning out what I'm going to say, how I'm going to explain it. I'll start out with, So, about this morning. And then I'll give a little laugh, like, how hilarious was that? Peter's the last one to come out. His hair is wet from a shower. It's weird that boys take showers at school, since girls never do. I wonder if they have stalls in there or just a bunch of shower heads and no privacy.
Hey,
he says when he sees me, but he doesn't stop. To his back, I hurriedly say, So, about this morning, I laugh and Peter turns around and just looks at me.
Oh, yeah. What was that all about?
It was a dumb joke, I begin. Peter crosses his arms and leans against the lockers.
Did it have anything to do with that letter you sent me?
No, I mean, yes, tangentially.
Look, he says kindly. I think you're cute, in a quirky way, but Jen and I just broke up, and I'm not in a place right now where I want to be somebody's boyfriend, so...
My mouth drops. Peter Kavinsky is giving me the brush off. I don't even like him, and he's giving me the brush off. Also, quirky? How am I quirky? Cute in a quirky way is an insult, a total insult. He's still talking, still giving me the kind eyes.
I mean, I'm definitely flattered that you would like me all this time. It's flattering, you know.
That's enough. That's plenty enough. I don't like you, I say loudly. So there's no reason you should feel flattered. Now it's Peter's turn to look taken aback. He quickly looks around to see if anyone heard. He leans forward and whispers, Then why did you kiss me? I kissed you because I don't like you. I explain like this should be obvious. See, my letters got sent out by someone, not me.
Wait a minute. Letters? How many of us are there?
5. And the guy I do like got one too. Peter frowns.
Who?
Why should I tell him anything? That's personal.
Hey, I think I have a right to know, since you pulled me into this little drama.
Peter says with a pointed look. I suck in my top lip and shake my head, and he adds,
If there even really is a guy.
There is so a guy. It's Josh Sanderson.
Doesn't he go out with your sister? I nod. I'm surprised he even knows this. I didn't think Josh and Margot would be on his radar. They're broken up now, but I don't want him to know I have feelings for him, for obvious reasons. So I told him you were my boyfriend.
So you used me to save face.
I mean, basically. Basically, exactly.
You're a funny girl.
First, I'm cute in a quirky way. Now I'm a funny girl. I know what that means. Anyway, thanks for going along with it, Peter. I flash him what I hope is a winning smile and turn on my heel to go. See ya! Peter reaches out and grabs me by the backpack.
Wait. So Sanderson thinks I'm your boyfriend now, right? So what are you going to tell him?
I try to shrug him loose, but he won't let go. I haven't figured that part out yet, but I will. I lift my chin. I'm quirky like that. Peter laughs out loud, his mouth open wide.
You really are funny, Lara Jean.
Chapter 21. My phone vibrates next to me. It's Chris.
Is it true?
I can hear her puffing on her cigarette.
Is what true?
I'm lying on my bed, on my stomach. My mom told me that if my stomach hurt, I should lie on my stomach and it would warm up and feel better. I don't think it's helping, though. My stomach's been in knots all day.
Did you run up to Kavinsky and kiss him like a maniac?
I close my eyes and whimper. I wish I could say no, because I'm not the kind of person to do that. But I did do it, so I guess I am. But my reasons were really good. I want to tell Chris the truth, but the whole thing is just so embarrassing.
Yeah, I went up to Peter Kavinsky and kissed him. Like a maniac.
Chris exhales.
Damn!
I know.
What the hell were you thinking?
Honestly, I don't even know. I just did it.
Shit! I didn't know you had it in you. I'm kind of impressed.
Thanks.
But you know Jen's gonna come after you, right? They may be broken up, but she still thinks she owns his ass.
My stomach lurches. Yeah, I know. I'm scared, Chris.
I'll do my best to protect you from her, but you know how she is. You better watch your back.
Chris hangs up. I feel even worse than before. If Margot was here, she'd probably say that writing those letters was pointless in the first place, and she'd get on me about telling such a big lie. Then she'd help me figure out a solution. But Margot's not here. She's in Scotland. And even bigger than that, she's the one person I can't talk to. She can never, never, never know how I felt about Josh. After a while, I get out of bed and wander into Kitty's room. She's on the floor rifling through her bottom drawer. Without looking up, she says, "Have you seen my pajamas with the hearts?" "I washed them yesterday, so they're probably in the dryer. Tonight, do you want to watch a movie and play Uno?" I could use a cheer-up night. Kitty scrambles up.
"Can't. I'm going to Alicia Bernard's birthday. It's in the schedule notebook."
"Who's Alicia Bernard?" I plop down on Kitty's unmade bed.
"She's the new girl. She invited all the girls in our class. Her mom's making crepes for breakfast. Do you know what a crepe is?"
"Yes."
"Have you ever had one? I hear they can be salty or sweet."
"Yes, I had one with Nutella and strawberries once." Josh and Margot and I drove down to Richmond because Margot wanted to go to the Edgar Allan Poe Museum. We ate lunch at a cafe downtown, and that's what I had. Kitty's eyes go big and greedy.
"I hope that's the kind her mom makes."
Then she dashes off, I guess to find her pajamas in the laundry room downstairs. I pick up Kitty's stuffed pig and cuddle it in my arms. So even my 9-year-old sister has plans on a Friday night. If Margot was here, we'd be going to the movies with Josh, or stopping by the cocktail hour at the Bellevue Retirement Home. If my dad was home, I could maybe get up the courage to take his car or have him drop me off, but I can't even do that. After Kitty gets picked up, I go back to my room and organize my shoe collection. It's a little early in the season to switch out my sandals for my winter shoes, but I go ahead and do it because I'm in the mood. I think about doing my clothes, too, but that's no small undertaking.
Instead, I sit down and write Margot a letter on stationery my grandma bought me in Korea. It's pale blue with a border of fluffy white lambs. I talk about school and Kitty's new teacher and a lavender skirt I ordered from a Japanese website that I'm sure she'll want to borrow. But I don't tell her any of the real things. I miss her so much. Nothing's the same without her. I'm realizing now that the year is going to be a lonely one because I don't have Margot and I don't have Josh, and it's just me alone. I have Chris, but not really. I wish I'd made more friends. If I had more friends, maybe I wouldn't have done something as stupid as kiss Peter K. in the hallway and tell Josh he's my boyfriend. Chapter 22. I wake up to the sound of the lawnmower. It's Saturday morning and I can't fall back to sleep, so now I'm lying in my bed staring at my walls, at all the pictures and things I've saved. I'm thinking I want to shake things up. I'm thinking maybe I should paint my room. The only question is, what color? Lavender? Cotton candy pink? Something bold like turquoise? Maybe just an accent wall. Maybe one marigold wall, one salmon pink. It's a lot to consider. I should probably wait for Margot to come home before I make such a momentous decision. Plus, I've never painted a room before, and Margot has, with Habitat for Humanity. She'll know what to do. On Saturdays, we usually have something good for breakfast, like pancakes or frittata with frozen shredded potato and broccoli. But since there's no Kitty and no Margot, I just eat cereal instead. Whoever heard of making pancakes or frittata for just one person? My dad's been awake for hours. He's outside mowing the lawn. I don't want to get roped into helping him do yard work, so I make myself busy in the house and clean the downstairs. I Swiffer and dust bust and wipe the tables down, and all the while my wheels are turning about how I'm going to get myself out of this Peter K. situation with even a sliver of dignity. The wheels turn and turn, but no good solutions come to mind. When Kitty gets dropped off, I'm folding laundry. She plops down on the couch on her belly and asks me, "What did you do last night?" "Nothing. I just stayed home." "And?" "I organized my closet." It's humiliating to say that out loud. Hastily, I change the subject. "So, did Alicia's mom make sweet crepes or salty ones?" "She made both. First we had ham and cheese, and then we had Nutella. How come we never have any Nutella?" "I think maybe because hazelnuts make Margot's throat itch." "Can we get some next time?" "Sure," I say. "We'll just have to eat the whole jar before Margot comes home." "No problem," Kitty says. On a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do you miss Gogo? I ask her. Kitty thinks this over. "A 6.5, she says at last. "Only a 6.5? "Yeah, I've been really busy," she says, rolling over and kicking her legs up in the air. "I've hardly had time to miss Margot. You know, if you got out more, maybe you wouldn't miss her so much." I boomerang a sock at her head, and Kitty explodes into a giggle fit. I'm tickling her armpits when Daddy comes in from outside with a stack of mail. "Something came back returned to sender for you, Lara Jean," he says, handing me an envelope. It's got my handwriting. I scramble up and snatch it out of his hands. It's my letter to Kenny from camp. It came back to me.
"Who's Kenny?" Daddy wants to know.
"Just a boy I met at church camp a long time ago," I say, tearing the envelope open. "Dear Kenny, it's the last day of camp, and probably the last time I will ever see you because we live so far apart. Remember on the second day I was scared to do archery and you made a joke about minnows and it was so funny I nearly peed my pants?" I stop reading. A joke about minnows? How funny could it have been? "I was really homesick, but you made me feel better. I think I might have left camp early if it hadn't been for you, Kenny. So, thank you. Also, you're a really amazing swimmer, and I like your laugh. I wish it had been me you kissed at the bonfire last night and not Blair H. Take care, Kenny. Have a really good rest of the summer, and a really good life. Love, Lara Jean." I clutch the letter to my chest. This is the first love letter I ever wrote. I'm glad it came back to me. Though, I suppose it wouldn't have been so bad if Kenny Donati got to know that he helped two people at camp that summer. The kid who almost drowned in the lake, and 12-year-old Lara Jean Song Covey.
Chapter 23. When my dad has a day off, he cooks Korean food. It's not exactly authentic, and sometimes he just goes to the Korean market and buys ready-made side dishes and marinated meat. But sometimes he'll call our grandma for a recipe, and he'll try. That's the thing. Daddy tries. He doesn't say so, but I know it's because he doesn't want us to lose our connection to our Korean side, and food is the only way he knows how to contribute. After Mommy died, he used to try to make us have playdates with other Korean kids, but it always felt awkward and forced. Except I did have a crush on Edward Kim for a minute there. Thank God the crush never escalated into full-on love, or else I'd have written him a letter too, and that'd just be one more person I'd have to avoid. My dad's made bosam, which is pork shoulder you slice up and then wrap in lettuce. He brined it last night in sugar and salt, and it's been roasting in the oven all day. Kitty and I keep checking on it. It smells so good. When it's finally time to eat, my dad has everything laid out on the dining room table so pretty. A silver bowl of buttered lettuce leaves just washed, with the water beads still clinging to the surface. A cut glass bowl of kimchi he bought from Whole Foods. A little bowl of pepper paste, and soy sauce with scallions and ginger. My dad's taking arty pictures of the table.
"I'm sending a pic to Margo so she can see," he says.
"What time is it over there?" I ask him. It's a cozy day. It's nearly 6 o'clock and I'm still in my PJs. I'm hugging my knees to me, sitting in the big dining room chair with the armrests.
"It's 11. I'm sure she's still up," my dad says, snapping away. "Why don't you invite Josh over? We're going to need help finishing all this food."
"He's probably busy," I say quickly. I still haven't figured out what I'm going to say to him about me and Peter, much less me and him.
"Just try him. He loves Korean food."
Daddy moves the pork shoulder so it's more centered.
"Hurry, before my bosam gets cold!"
I pretend to text him on my phone. I feel a tiny bit guilty for lying, but Daddy would understand if he knew all the facts.
"I don't understand why you kids text when you could just call. You'd get an answer right away instead of waiting for one."
"You're so old, Daddy," I say. I look down at my phone. "Josh can't come over. Let's just eat. Kitty, dinner bell!" "Coming!" Kitty screams from upstairs.
"Well, maybe he'll come over later and take some leftovers," Daddy says.
"Daddy, Josh has his own life now. Why would he come over when Margo's not here? Besides, they're not even together anymore, remember?" My dad makes a confused face.
"What? They're not?"
I guess Margo didn't tell him after all. Though you'd have thought he could have sussed it out for himself when Josh didn't come with us to the airport to drop Margo off. Why don't dads know anything? Does he not have eyes and ears? "No, they're not. And by the way, Margo is at college in Scotland and my name is Lara Jean."
"All right, all right. Your dad is clueless," Daddy says. "I get it. No need to rub it in."
He scratches his chin.
"Geez, I could have sworn Margo never mentioned anything."
Kitty comes crashing into the dining room. "Yum, yum, yum!" She slams into her chair and starts spearing pork onto her plate.
"Kitty, we have to pray first," my dad says, settling into his chair.
"We only ever pray before we eat, when we eat in the dining room. And we only ever eat in the dining room when Daddy cooks Korean, or on Thanksgiving, or Christmas. Mommy used to take us to church when we were little, but after she died, Daddy tried to keep it going, but he has Sunday shifts sometimes, and it became less and less."
"Thank you, God, for this food you have blessed us with. Thank you for my beautiful daughters, and please watch over our Margot. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen."
"Amen," we echo.
"Looks pretty great, right, girls?"
My dad is grinning as he assembles a lettuce leaf with pork and rice and kimchi.
"Kitty, you know how to do it, right? It's like a little taco."
Kitty nods and copies him. I make my own lettuce leaf taco and nearly spit it out. The pork is really, really salty. So salty I could cry. But I keep chewing, and across the table Kitty's making a horrible face at me. But I give her a shush look. Daddy hasn't tried his yet. He's taking a picture of his plate. "So good, Daddy," I say. "It tastes like at the restaurant."
"Thanks, Lara Jean. It came out just like the picture. I can't believe how beautiful and crispy the top looks."
My dad finally takes a bite, and then he frowns.
Is this salty to you?
Not really, I say. He takes another bite.
This tastes really salty to me. Kitty, what do you think?
Kitty's chugging water.
No, it tastes good, Daddy.
I give her a secret thumbs up.
No, it definitely tastes salty.
He swallows. I followed the recipe exactly. Maybe I used the wrong kind of salt for the brine? Lara Jean, taste it again.
I take a teeny tiny bite, which I try to hide by putting the lettuce in front of my face.
Maybe if I cut more from the center.
My phone buzzes on the table. It's a text from Josh. Was coming back from a run and saw the light on in the dining room. A totally normal text, as if yesterday never happened.
Korean food?
Josh has some sixth sense of when my dad's cooking Korean food, because he'll come sniffing around right when we're sitting down to eat. He loves Korean food. When my grandma comes to visit, he won't leave her side. He'll even watch Korean dramas with her. She cuts him pieces of apple and peels clementines for him like he's a baby. My grandma likes boys better than girls. Now that I think of it, all the women in my family really do love Josh. Except for Mommy, who never got to meet him. But I'm sure she'd love him, too. She'd love anyone who's as good to Margot as Josh is, was, to her. Kitty cranes her neck to look over my shoulder.
Is that Josh? Is he coming over?
No. I set down my phone and it buzzes again. Can I come over?
It says he wants to come over.
My dad perks up.
Tell him to come over. I want to get his opinion on this bosom.
Listen, everyone in this family needs to accept that Josh is no longer a part of it. He and Margot are donezo.
I hesitate. Does Kitty still not know? I can't remember if it's still supposed to be a secret.
I mean, now that Margot's at college and they're long distance. I know they're broken up, Kitty says, making a lettuce wrap with just rice. Margot told me over video chat.
Across the table, my dad makes a sad face and stuffs a piece of lettuce in his mouth. Her mouth full, Kitty continues.
I just don't see why we can't still be friends with him. He's all of our friend, right, Daddy?
Right, my dad agrees. And look, relationships are incredibly amorphous. They could get back together. They could stay friends. Who's to say what will happen in the future? I say we don't count Josh out just yet.
We're finishing up dinner when I get another text from Josh. Never mind, it says. We're stuck eating that salty pork shoulder for the rest of the weekend. The next morning, my dad makes fried rice and cuts the pork into tiny pieces and says to think of it like bacon. For dinner, I test that theory by mixing it with Kraft macaroni and cheese, and I end up throwing out the whole batch because it tastes like slop. If we had a dog, Kitty keeps saying, I make a batch of regular macaroni instead. After dinner, I take Sadie the sweetheart for a walk. That's what my sisters and I call Sadie. She's a golden retriever that lives down the street. The Shaws are out of town for the night, so they asked me to feed her and walk her. Normally, Kitty would beg to be the one to do it, but there's some movie on TV that she's been waiting to see. Sadie and I are doing the usual route around our cul-de-sac when Josh jogs up to us in his running clothes. Crouching down to pet Sadie, he says,
So, how are things going with Kavinsky?
Funny you should bring that up, Josh, because I've got my story locked and loaded. Peter and I had a fight via video chat this morning, in case Josh has noticed I haven't left the house all weekend. And we broke up, and I'm devastated about the whole thing, because I've been in constant love with Peter Kavinsky since the 7th grade, but c'est la vie. Actually, Peter and I broke up this morning. I bite my lip and try to look sad. It's just really hard, you know, after I liked him for so long and then finally he likes me back. But it's just not meant to be. I don't think he's over his breakup yet. I think maybe Genevieve still has too strong a hold on him, so there's no room in his heart for me. Josh gives me a funny look.
That's not what he was saying today at McCall's.
What in the world was Peter K doing at a bookstore? He's not the bookstore type.
What did he say?
I try to sound casual, but my heart is pounding so loudly, I'm pretty sure Sadie can hear it. Josh keeps petting Sadie.
What did he say?
Now I'm just trying not to sound shrill.
Like, what was said exactly?
When I was ringing him up, I asked him when you guys started going out, and he said recently. He said he really liked you.
What? I must look as shocked as I feel because Josh straightens up and says,
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too.
You were surprised that he would like me?
Well, kind of. Kavinsky just isn't the kind of guy who would date a girl like you.
When I stare back at him, sour and unsmiling, he quickly tries to backtrack.
I mean, because you're not, you know...
I'm not what? As pretty as Genevieve? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is you're like this sweet, innocent girl who likes to be at home with her family, and I don't know, I guess Kavinsky doesn't strike me as someone who would be into that.
Before he can say another word, I grab my phone out of my jacket pocket and say, That's Peter calling me right now, so I guess he does like homely girls.
I didn't say homely. I said you like to be at home.
Later, Josh.
I speed walk away, dragging Sadie with me. Into my phone, I say, Oh, hey, Peter.
Chapter 24. In chem, Peter sits a row in front of me. I write him a note.
Why would you tell Josh that we're... I hesitate and then finish with a thing.
I kick the back of his chair and he turns around and I hand him the note. He slouches in his seat to read it. Then I watch as he scribbles something. He tips back in his chair and drops the note on my desk without looking at me.
A thing? Ha ha.
I press down so hard my pencil tip chips off.
Please answer the question.
We'll talk later.
I let out a frustrated sigh, and Matt, my lab partner, gives me a funny look. After class, Peter is swept away with all his friends. They leave in a big group. I'm packing up my backpack when he returns alone. He hops up on the table.
So, let's talk, he says, super casual.
I clear my throat and try to gather my bearings.
Why did you tell Josh we were...
I almost say a thing again, but then change it to together.
I don't get what you're so upset about. I did you a favor. I could have just as easily blown your spot.
I pause. He's right, he could have. So why didn't you?
You've sure got a funny way of saying thank you. You're welcome, by the way.
Automatically, I say, thank you. Wait, why am I thanking him? I appreciate you letting me kiss you, but...
You're welcome, he says again.
Ugh, he's so insufferable. Just for that, I'm going to toss a little dig his way.
That was really generous of you, to let me do that. But I've already explained to Josh that it's not going to work out with us because Genevieve has you whipped, so it's all good. You can stop pretending now.
Peter glares at me.
I'm not whipped.
But aren't you, though? I mean, you guys have been together since the 7th grade. You're basically her property.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Peter scoffs. There was a rumor last year that she made you get a tattoo of her initials on your butt for her birthday.
I pause.
So did you?
I reach around him and fake try to lift up the back of his shirt. He yelps and jumps away from me, and I collapse in a fit of giggles.
So you do have a tattoo!
I don't have a tattoo, he yells. And we're not even together anymore, so can you stop with this shit? We broke up. We're over. I'm done with her.
Wait, didn't she break up with you? I ask.
Peter shoots me a dirty look.
It was mutual.
Hastily, I say, Well, I'm sure you'll get back together soon. You've broken up before, right? Only to get back together again, like, immediately? It's probably because you were each other's firsts. That's why you can't let each other go. I've heard that's how it is with firsts, especially with guys.
Peter's mouth drops.
How did you know?
Oh, everybody knows. You guys did it freshman year in her parents' basement, right?
He gives a grudging nod.
See? Even I know, and I'm a nobody. Even if you do stay broken up for real this time, which I doubt, it's not like any other girl can date you.
Meaningfully, I say, let's not forget what happened to Jameela Singh.
Peter and Genevieve broke up for a month last year, so Peter started dating Jameela Singh. Jameela might even be prettier than Genevieve. A different kind of pretty, anyway. More like hot. She has long, wavy black hair and a little waist and a big butt. Let's just say it didn't end well for her. Not only did Genevieve cut her out of the group, but she told everyone that Jamila's family had an Indonesian slave living with them, when really it was just her cousin. And I'm pretty sure it was Genevieve who started a rumor online that Jamila washed her hair only once a month. The final straw was when Jamila's parents got an anonymous email saying that she was having sex with Peter. Her parents transferred her right out and put her in private school. Genevieve and Peter were back together by spring formal.
Jen says she didn't have anything to do with that.
I give him a get real look. Please, Peter. I know her well, and so do you. Well, I did know her well, but I don't think people change at the core. They are who they are. Slowly, Peter says,
That's right. You two were BFFs back in the day.
We were friends, I agree. I wouldn't call us BFFs, but... Wait a minute, why are we talking about me again? Everybody knows it was Genevieve who told Jamila's parents. You don't have to be a detective to figure out that Genevieve was jealous of her. Jamila was the prettiest girl in our grade next to Genevieve. Jen was always a very jealous person. I remember this one time my dad bought me a... Peter's staring at me in a thoughtful way, and it's all of a sudden making me nervous.
What?
Let's just do this for a little while.
Do what?
Let's let people think we're a couple.
Wait, what?
It's driving Jen crazy not knowing what's up with you and me. Why don't we let her sit with it a little longer? It's actually kind of perfect. You date me first, and then Jen will get it that we're over. You'll be breaking the seal.
He raises an eyebrow at me.
Do you even know what breaking the seal means?
Yes, of course I know what that means. I have no idea what that means. I make a mental note to ask Chris the next time I see her.
Peter comes up close to me and I scoot backward. He laughs and cocks his head to the side and puts his hands on my shoulders.
So then break my seal.
I let out a nervous laugh.
Ha ha ha, sorry Peter, but I'm not interested in you.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. I'm not interested in you either, like at all.
Peter shudders.
So what do you say?
I shrug my shoulders so his hands fall away.
Hello, I just got through explaining to you how Jen will kill any girl that goes near you.
Peter dismisses this.
Jen's all talk. She'd never do anything to anybody. You just don't know her like I do.
When I don't say anything, he takes my silence as encouragement, and he says,
It would help you out too, you know, with that kid, Josh. Weren't you so worried about losing face in front of him? This could save you from more humiliation, because why would you be with him when you could be with me?
Well, pretend to be with me. Strictly business, though. I can't have you falling in love with me, too.
It gives me great pleasure to look up into his handsome boy face and sweetly say, Peter, I don't even want to be your pretend girlfriend, much less your real one.
He blinks.
Why not? You read my letter. You're not my type. Nobody would ever believe I would like you.
It's up to you. I'm just trying to do us both a favor.
Then he shrugs and looks over my shoulder, like he's bored with this conversation.
But Josh definitely believed it.
In a flash, without even thinking, I say, Okay, let's do it. Hours later, I'm lying in bed that night, still marveling about it all. What people will say when they see me walking down the hall with Peter Kavinsky. Chapter 25. The next morning, Peter is waiting in the parking lot for me when I get off the bus.
Hey,
he says.
Are you seriously taking the bus every day?
My car's being fixed, remember? My accident? He sighs like this is somehow offensive to him, me taking the bus to school. Then he grabs my hand and holds it as we walk into school together. This is the first time I've walked down the school hallway holding hands with a boy. It should feel momentous, special. But it doesn't because it's not real. Honestly, it feels like nothing. Emily Nussbaum does a double take when she sees us. Emily is Jen's best friend. She's staring so hard I'm surprised she doesn't take a quick pic on her phone and send it to Jen. Peter keeps stopping to say hi to people, and I stand there smiling like it's the most natural thing in the world, me and Peter Kavinsky. At one point, I try to let go of his hand because mine is starting to feel sweaty, but he tightens his grip.
"Your hand is too hot," I hiss.
Through clenched teeth, he says,
"No, your hand is."
I'm sure Genevieve's hands are never sweaty. She could probably hold hands for days without getting overheated. When we get to my locker, we finally drop hands so I can dump my books inside. I'm shutting my locker door when Peter leans in and tries to kiss me on the mouth. I'm so startled, I turn my head and we hit foreheads.
Ow!
Peter rubs his forehead and glares at me.
Well, don't just sneak up on me like that.
My forehead hurts, too. We really banged them hard, like cymbals. If I looked up right now, I would see blue cartoon birdies.
Lower your voice, dummy, he says through clenched teeth. Don't call me a dummy, you dummy,
I whisper back. Peter heaves a big sigh like he's really annoyed with me. I'm about to snap at him that it's his fault, not mine, when I catch a glimpse of Genevieve gliding down the hallway.
Gotta go, I say, and I dart off in the opposite direction.
Wait, Peter calls out, but I keep darting. I'm lying on my bed with my pillow over my face, reliving the horrible kiss that wasn't. I keep trying to block it out, but it just keeps coming back. I put my hand to my forehead. I don't think I can do this. It's also, I mean, the kissing, the sweaty hands, everybody looking, it's too much. I'm just going to have to tell him I changed my mind and I don't want to do this anymore, and that'll be that. I don't have his number, and I don't want to say any of this in an email either. I'll have to go to his house. It's not far. I still remember the way. I run downstairs passing Kitty, who is balancing a plate of Oreos and a glass of milk on a tray.
I'm borrowing your bike, I yell as I fly past her. I'll be back soon.
You better not let anything happen to it, Kitty yells back.
I grab her helmet and the bike and tear out of the yard, pedaling as fast as I can. My knees hit my chest a little, but I'm not that much taller than Kitty, so it isn't so bad. Peter lives two neighborhoods away. It takes me less than 20 minutes to get there. When I do, there aren't any cars in the driveway. Peter's not home. My heart sinks to the pavement. What do I do now? Sit and wait for him on the front porch like some kind of stalker? What if his mom comes home first? I take off my helmet and sit for a minute so I can rest. My hair is damp and sweaty from the ride over, and I'm exhausted. I try to run my fingers through my hair, smooth it out. It's a lost cause. As I'm contemplating texting Chris and seeing if she can come get me, Peter's car comes roaring down the street and up the driveway. I drop my phone and then scramble to pick it up. Peter climbs out of his car and raises his eyebrows at me.
Look who's here. My adoring girlfriend.
I stand up and wave at him. Can I talk to you for a minute? He slings his backpack over his shoulder and takes his time sauntering over. He sits down on the front step like a prince on his throne, and I stand in front of him, my helmet in one hand and my phone in the other.
So, what's up? He draws. Let me guess. You're here to back out on me. Am I right?
He's so smug. So sure of himself, I don't want to give him the satisfaction of being right.
I just wanted to go over our game plan with you, I say, sitting down. Get our story straight before people start asking questions.
He raises his eyebrows.
Oh, okay, makes sense. So, how did we get together?
I clasp my hands in my lap and recite. When I got in that car accident last week, you happened to be driving by, and you waited for AAA with me, and then you drove me home. You were really nervous the whole time because you've actually had kind of a thing for me since middle school. I was your first kiss, so this was your big chance.
You were my first kiss? He interrupts. How about I was your first kiss? That's a lot more believable.
I ignore him and continue on. This was your big chance, so you took it. You asked me out that very day, and we've been hanging out ever since, and now we're basically a couple.
I don't think Jen's gonna buy this, he says, shaking his head.
Peter, I say in my most patient voice, the most believable lies are the ones that are at least a little bit true. I did get into a car accident. You did stop and sit with me. We did kiss in middle school.
It's not that.
Then what?
Jen and I hooked up that day after I saw you.
I sigh. Okay, spare me the details. My story still works, though. After the car accident, you couldn't get me out of your mind, so you asked me out as soon as Genevieve dumped... I mean, as soon as you guys broke up. I clear my throat. Since we're on the topic, I'd also like to set some ground rules.
What kind of ground rules?
He asks, leaning back. I press my lips together and take a breath.
Well, I don't want you trying to kiss me again.
Peter curls his lip at me.
Trust me, I don't want to do it either. My forehead still hurts from this morning. I think I have a bruise.
He pushes his hair off his forehead.
Do you see a bruise?
No, but I see a receding hairline.
What?
Ha, I knew that would get him. Peter's so vain. Calm down, I'm only kidding. Do you have a piece of paper and a pen?
You're gonna write this down?
Primly, I say, it'll help us remember. Rolling his eyes, Peter reaches into his backpack, pulls out a notebook, and hands it to me. I turn to a clean page and write at the top, contract. Then I write, no kissing.
Are people really gonna buy it if we never touch each other in public?
Peter asks, looking skeptical. I don't think relationships are just about physicality. There are ways to show you care about someone, not just using your lips. Peter's smiling, and he looks like he's about to crack a joke, so I swiftly add, or any other body part. He groans.
You've got to give me something here, Lara Jean. I have a reputation to uphold. None of my friends will believe I suddenly turned into a monk to date you. How about at least a hand in your back jean pocket? Trust me, it'll be strictly professional.
I don't say what I'm thinking, which is that he cares way too much what people think about him. I just nod and write down, Peter is allowed to put a hand in Lara Jean's back jean pocket. But no more kissing, I say, keeping my head down so he can't see me blush.
You're the one who started it, he reminds me.
And also, I don't have any STDs, so you can get that out of your head. I don't think you have any STDs. I look back at him. The thing is, I've never had a boyfriend before. I've never been on a real date before or held hands walking down the hallway. This is all new for me. So I'm sorry about the forehead thing this morning. I just wish all these firsts were happening for real and not with you. Peter seems to be thinking this over. He says,
huh, okay. Let's just save some stuff then.
Yeah?
Sure. We'll save some stuff for you to do when it's the real thing and not for show.
I'm touched. Who knew Peter could be so thoughtful and generous?
Like, I won't pay for stuff. I'll save that for a guy who really likes you.
My smile fades. I wasn't expecting you to pay for anything. Peter's on a roll.
And I won't walk you to class or buy you flowers.
I get the picture. It seems to me like Peter's less concerned about me and more concerned about his wallet. He sure is cheap. So when you were with Genevieve, what kind of things did she like you to do? I'm afraid he's going to take this opportunity to make a joke, but instead he stares off into space and says,
she was always bitching at me to write her notes.
Notes?
Yeah, at school. I didn't get why I couldn't just text her. It's immediate, it's efficient. Why not use the technology that's available to us?
This I understand perfectly. Genevieve didn't want notes. She wanted letters. Real letters written in his handwriting on actual paper that she could hold and keep and read whenever the mood struck her. They were proof, solid and tangible, that someone was thinking about her.
I'll write you a note a day, Peter says suddenly with gusto. That'll drive her ass crazy.
I write down, Peter will write Lara Jean one note every day. Peter leans in.
Write down that you have to go to some parties with me. And write down, no rom-coms.
Who said anything about rom-coms? Not every girl wants to watch rom-coms.
I can just tell you're the kind of girl who does.
I'm annoyed that he has this perception of me, and even more annoyed that he's right. I write, no dumb action movies.
Then what does that leave us with?
Peter demands. Superhero movies, horror movies, period films, documentaries, foreign films. Peter makes a face, grabs the pen and paper from me, and writes down, "No foreign films." He also writes, "Lara Jean will make Peter's picture her phone wallpaper." "And vice versa," I say. I point my phone at him. "Smile." Peter smiles, and ugh, it's annoying how handsome he is. Then he reaches for his phone, and I stop him. "Not right now. My hair looks sweaty and gross." "Good point," he says, and I want to punch him. "Can you also write down that under no circumstances can either of us tell anyone the truth?" I ask him.
"The first rule of Fight Club," Peter says knowingly.
"I've never seen that movie."
"Of course you haven't,"
he says, and I make a face at him. Also, mental note, watch Fight Club. Peter writes it down, and then I sit next to him and take the pen and underline, "under no circumstances," twice. "What about an end date?" I ask suddenly.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, how long are we going to do this for? Like, 2 weeks? A month?" Peter shrugs.
"For as long as we feel it."
"But don't you think we should have something set?" He cuts me off.
"You need to relax, Lara Jean. Life doesn't have to be so planned. Just roll with it and let it happen."
I sigh and say, "Words of wisdom from the great Kavinsky." And Peter wiggles his eyebrows at me. "Just as long as it's over by the time my sister comes back for Christmas break. She can always tell when I'm lying."
"Oh, we'll definitely be done by then," he says.
"Good," I say. And then I sign the paper, and so does he. And we have our contract. I'm too proud to ask for a ride, and Peter doesn't offer, so I put my helmet back on and ride Kitty's bike back home. I'm halfway there when I realize we never exchanged phone numbers. I don't even know my own supposed boyfriend's phone number. Chapter 26. I'm at McCall's bookstore picking up a copy of The Glass Menagerie for English and scanning the store for Josh. Now that Peter and I have everything worked out, I can triumphantly crow all about it. That'll show him for thinking I'm just a homebody no boy would want to date. I spot him setting up a display of new books in the nonfiction section. He doesn't see me, so I sneak up behind and yell, "Boo!" He jumps and drops a book on the floor.
"You scare the crap out of me."
"That was the point, Joshy." I'm having a giggle fit. The look on his face. I wonder why it is so deliciously funny to sneak up on people.
All right, quit laughing. What are you here for?"
I hold up my book and wave it in his face. "I have Mr. Radner for English. You had him, right?"
"Yeah, he's good. He's strict, but fair. I still have my notes if you want them."
"Thanks," I say. Brightly, I add, "So guess what? Peter and I aren't broken up after all. It was just a misunderstanding."
"Oh, yeah?"
Josh starts stacking books in a column. "Mm-hmm. I saw him yesterday and we talked and talked for hours. I feel like I could talk to him about anything, you know? He just really gets me." Josh's forehead wrinkles.
"What do you guys talk about?"
"Oh, everything. Movies, books, the usual stuff."
"Huh. I never saw him as the reading type."
He squints and looks over my shoulder.
"Hey, I gotta go help Janice out at the counter. When you're ready to check out, come to my register so I can give you my discount."
Hmm. This isn't exactly the reaction I was hoping for. I barely even got a chance to crow. "Sounds good," I say, but he's already walking away. I hug my book to my chest. Now that Josh knows I'm not in love with him anymore and I'm with Peter, I guess everything will slide right back into place and be normal again. Like my letter never happened. Chapter 27.
"Margot called when you were out today," my dad says over dinner.
Dinner is just salad. Salad for me and Daddy, and cereal for Kitty. There were supposed to be chicken breasts, but I forgot to take them out of the freezer this morning, so there's just lettuce and carrot with balsamic dressing. Daddy's supplementing his with 2 boiled eggs, and I have a piece of buttered toast. Some dinner. Cereal and lettuce. I need to get to the grocery store stat. Since Margot left, I've only spoken to her twice, and once was over video chat with all of us crowded around my laptop. I didn't get to ask her about the good stuff, the real deal, all the adventures she's been going on, and the people she's been meeting. I think I heard that British people drink absinthe at pubs. I wonder if she's tried it by now. I've emailed Margot so many times and only gotten 1 email back in return so far.
I understand that she is busy, but the least she can do is email back once a day. For all she knows, I could be dead in a ditch. What did she say? I ask as I cut my carrot into tiny pieces.
She's thinking about trying out for the Shinty Club team, my dad says, wiping salad dressing off his chin.
What's Shinty?
Kitty asks me, and I shrug.
It's a Scottish sport that's similar to field hockey, Daddy explains. It started out as safe sword fight practice in medieval Scotland.
Boring. Before Daddy can get started on telling us more about medieval Scotland, I say,
Let's send Gogo a care package, stuff she can't get over there.
Yeah, Kitty cheers.
What should we send? I ask.
I say we all contribute something. Daddy chews and taps his finger to his chin.
I'll send gummy vitamins, he says, and Advil. I think she only took a small bottle of Advil, and you know how she gets migraines sometimes.
I approve. I point my fork at Kitty. And what about you?
I've got something I could send, Kitty says. Should I go get it?
Daddy and I look at each other and shrug.
Sure.
Kitty comes running back with a picture she's drawn of Margot, petting a dog. The exact breed of dog Kitty wants, Akita. I have to laugh. Kitty frowns.
What's so funny?
Nothing, I say.
Do you think it's good enough? Kitty asks me.
Good enough to hang up on our wall?
Definitely, I say. No, I want you to really look at it, she says. Critique it. I can always do better. Margot won't want it if it's not my best work.
Kitty, it definitely is, I say. Why would I lie? She sighs.
I just don't know if it's finished yet.
Only the artist knows, Daddy says with a sage nod.
What do you think about the dog? She asks him.
Isn't it cute? Daddy takes the picture from me and looks at it closely.
Yes, the dog is undeniably a good-looking dog.
I'm Asian, too, she says.
Kitty sits back down and takes a bite of cereal and tries not to smile. She's doing her Inception thing, planting positive associations about dogs in Daddy's head. The kid never rests. She always has an angle.
What else is going in the care package? Kitty wants to know.
I start ticking off with my fingers. Tampons, because I don't know if they have our brand in Scotland. Flannel PJs, thick socks, Girl Scout cookies.
Where are we going to get Girl Scout cookies this time of year?
Daddy asks.
I have a box of thin mints hidden in the freezer, I say.
He gives me a hurt look.
Hidden from who?
Thin mints are his favorite. If there are thin mints in the house, forget about it. Daddy is a thin mint monster. I give an enigmatic shrug. Also, I'm sending Margot's favorite kind of rollerball pen, and I think that's it.
Don't forget her brown boots, my dad reminds me. She specifically requested we send her brown boots with the laces.
Did she?
I was hoping Margot hadn't noticed she'd left them behind.
When did she say that?
She emailed me yesterday.
I'll see if I can find them.
My dad says,
Weren't you wearing them this weekend?
And at the same time, Kitty says, They're in your closet. I throw up my hands.
All right, all right.
If you get the box together tonight, I can drop it off at the post office tomorrow morning on my way to work,
Daddy offers.
I shake my head. I want to send the scarf I've been knitting, and it won't be ready in time. Maybe in another week or two?
Slurping her milk, Kitty waves a hand at me and advises,
Just give up on the scarf already. Knitting isn't your thing.
I open my mouth to argue and then close it. Maybe she's right. If we wait for my scarf to be done to send the care package, Margot will probably be out of college already.
All right, I say. We'll send the care package sans scarf. I'm not saying I'm giving up on knitting, though. I'll keep chugging along on it and have it ready for you for your Christmas gift, Kitty.
I smile at her sweetly.
It's pink, your favorite.
Kitty's eyes go wide with horror.
Or Margot. You could also give it to Margot.
Kitty slides a piece of paper under my door that night. It's her Christmas list. It's only September. Christmas is still months away. Puppy is written at the top in capital block letters. She also wants an ant farm and a skateboard and a TV in her room. Yeah, that TV's not going to happen. I could buy her the ant farm, though. Or maybe I could talk to Daddy about the puppy. She hasn't said so, but I think she misses Margot a lot.
In a way, Margot is the only mother she's known. It must be hard for Kitty having her so far away. I'll just have to remind myself to be more patient with her, more attentive. She needs me now. I go to her room and climb into her bed. She's just turned the lights off, but is already halfway to sleep.
What if we got a kitten? I whisper.
Her eyes fly open.
No way in heck!
Don't you think we're more of a kitten family? Dreamily, I say. A fluffy gray and white kitten with a bushy tail. We could call him Prince if it's a boy. Ooh, or Gandalf the Grey. Wouldn't that be cute? Or if it's a girl, maybe Agatha or Tilly or Boss. It really depends on her personality.
Quit it, Kitty warns. We're not getting a cat. Cats are blah. They're also very manipulative.
Impressed, I say, where did you learn that word?
TV.
A puppy is a lot of work. Who's going to feed him and walk him and house train him?
I'll do it. I'll do it all. I'm responsible enough to take care of it on my own.
I snuggle closer to her. I love the way Kitty's head smells after she's had a bath.
Ha! You don't even do the dishes ever. And you never clean your room. And when have you ever helped fold laundry even once in your life? I mean, really, if you don't do any of those things, how can you be responsible for another living creature?
Kitty shoves me off.
Then I'll help more.
I'll believe it when I see it.
If I help out more, will you help me convince Daddy about the puppy?
If you help out more, I agree. If you can prove to me that you're not a baby anymore. Kitty will be 10 in January. That's plenty old enough to help out around the house. Margo babies her too much, I think.
I'm putting you in charge of emptying the upstairs trash cans once a week and helping with the laundry. So, would I get a raise in my allowance?
No. The incentive is me helping you convince Daddy to get a dog, and also not being so babyish anymore. I fluff up my pillow. By the way, I'm sleeping in here tonight. Kitty gives me a swift kick, and I almost fall out of the bed.
You're the babyish one, not me, Lara Jean.
Just let me sleep in here one night.
You take up all the covers!
Kitty tries to kick me again, but I make my body heavy and pretend I'm already asleep. Soon, we both fall asleep for real. Sunday night, I'm doing my homework in bed when I get a call from a number I don't recognize. Hello?
Hey, what are you doing?
Sorry, but who's this?
It's Peter.
Oh, how did you get my number?
Don't worry about it.
There's a longish silence. It's agonizing. Every millisecond that ticks by with neither of us talking, but I don't know what to say.
So, what do you want?
Peter laughs.
You're so aw, Covey.
Your car's in the shop, right? So how about I pick you up for school?
Okay. 7:30.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye, I say, and I hang up. Chapter 28. The next morning, I wake Kitty up early so she can braid my hair.
Leave me alone, she says, rolling onto her other side. I'm sleeping.
Please, 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 can I get a braid crown? I ask her, squatting in front of her bed.
No, you can have a side braid and that's it.
Swiftly, Kitty braids my braid, and then she falls right back to sleep, and I'm on my way to figure out clothes. Now that Peter and I are official, people will be noticing me more, so I should wear something good. I try on a polka-dot puffy-sleeved dress with tights, but it doesn't look right. Neither does my favorite heart sweater with the little pom-poms. Everything looks so kiddish all of a sudden. I finally settle on a floral baby doll dress I ordered off a Japanese street fashion site with ankle boots. Sort of a 70s London look. When I run downstairs at 7:25, Kitty is sitting at the kitchen table with her jean jacket on, waiting for me.
Why are you downstairs already? I ask her. Her bus doesn't come until 8. I have my field trip today, so I have to go to school early, remember?
I run and look at the calendar on the refrigerator. There it is, in my handwriting, Kitty's field trip. Shoot. I was supposed to drive her, but that was before my car accident. Daddy had an overnight shift at the hospital, and he's not home yet, so I don't have a car. Can one of the carpool moms come get you?
It's too late. The bus leaves at 7:40.
Kitty's face is getting splotchy, and her chin is starting to quiver.
I can't miss the bus, Lara Jean.
Okay, okay, don't get upset. I've got a ride coming for us right now. Don't worry, okay? I pluck a greenish banana from the banana hammock. Let's go outside and wait for him.